From the University of Leicester in the United Kingdom, this is Glenn Fulcher with another issue of Language Testing Bites. The assessment of aviation English has become something of an icon of high-stakes assessment in recent years, and there has been a rush of publications around the design of tests for air traffic controllers and pilots. In 2010, the International Language Testing Association worked closely with the International Civil Aviation Organization to create a test endorsement system, which shows how closely safety is associated with language proficiency in this particular industry. In Language Testing 32.2, we publish a paper by Ha-Jong Kim and Kathy Elder, both from the University of Melbourne, which examines the construct of aviation English from the perspective of airline professionals in Korea. Welcome to Language Testing Bites to talk about the assessment of aviation English.
Thanks for inviting me to this interview. It's a real pleasure to have this opportunity.
Can we start the podcast with a rather general question? Why do you think the assessment of aviation English has become such a hot topic over the past few years?
Well, I think there are a few reasons for that. The International Civil Aviation Organization, or ICAO, is a special agency under the United Nations, and its 191 member states agreed to comply with the English proficiency requirements set by this organization. I don't think there have been many such cases. I mean, there are some language proficiency policies implemented at the national, state, or local levels, but the fact that the ICAO language proficiency requirements are internationally applicable draws wide attention. There are very high stakes attached to this policy at the national level for the member states, at the personal levels for the pilot and air traffic controller whose English is tested, and at the level of the general public or the people served by the aviation industry. Firstly, at the national level, the relevant government agency of each ICAO member state has to make sure that their aviation personnel pass the test, which meet the ICAO requirements. Otherwise, they will face serious consequences. So if there were a lot of aviation personnel who failed the test, it wouldn't look good for the member states. And also, they might have to look to beyond their borders to hire new pilots, new, more English proficient pilots, and this might be costly and unpopular. Secondly, at the personal level, for the airline pilots or air traffic controllers who fail to reach the minimum required English proficiency level on the test, there are also serious consequences. Simply put, they risk losing their jobs. Lastly, the general public has a stake in this issue too, with the international aviation industry booming. We quite often hear about aircraft accidents, and it's reported that communication problems may be sometimes the cause of the accident. So it's not hard to see why airline passengers, who obviously care about their personal safety, might also have concern about the English levels of the pilot who fly the planes or the air traffic controller who give them instruction and respond to their request. In addition to that, there has been a growing interest and considerable international attention from the field of applied linguistics since the adoption of the ICAO language proficiency requirements. There is a great demand for training aviation personnel for better communication skills and also for language testing specialists for designing and developing tests which can meet the ICAO requirements. So I think those are the main reasons why the assessment of aviation English has become a hot topic over the past few years.
That's really interesting. I guess it shows that this particular domain is quintessentially what we mean by high-stakes assessment. But before we turn to your particular study, I'd like to ask more specifically about the language that we're assessing in aviation English tests. Aviation English, particularly radio telephony, is a highly restricted language. Can you briefly tell us just how restricted it is and how far beyond that restricted language aviation language tests are expected to assess? I mean, the non-routine kind of situations that they might face.
There are two different kinds of language use in aviation radio telephony communication. One is a phraseology and the other is a plain language. Phraseology is, as you said, extremely restricted in terms of register. So it's a special language with a restricted repertoire of words and phrases. For example, I will say something to you in phraseology, which you probably won't understand, and then I will explain it to you. Korean Air 9832, Incheon Tower, taxi to holding point 1816, via mic, then mic 19er. This is an instruction transmitted from an air traffic controller in aerodrome control at the international airport in Korea to a Korean Air pilot. Korean Air 9832 is a flight identifier, and Incheon Tower is the name of the control tower at the airport. Taxi to holding point 1816 means the aircraft should move to a holding point on the runway number 16 and wait there for the next instruction. Fire mic then mic 19er are the names of taxiways spelled out and pronounced according to radio telephony spellings and conventions. So, phraseology is very restricted and context and procedure dependent. Plain English, on the other hand, is a way of using English effectively in the airspace when phraseology is unavailable. According to the ICAO, it should be delivered in the same clear, concise, and unambiguous manner as phraseology. However, there are no examples, situations, or detailed description of plain English, so the definition is open to subjective interpretation. The phraseology repertoire is large enough for most pilot-controller communication. And also, there are ways of dealing with frequently occurring non-routine situations, which become habitual for many in-service pilots and air traffic controllers. For instance, for non-routine situations caused by severe weather, congested traffic, change of course, and delayed operation, certain phrases and conventions of plain English are available, which are learned and automatized. So, these more predictable features of plain English use become incorporated in the routinized special language. But as we know, things are not always predictable in aviation, and although plain English is required in unpredictable situations, such as running low on fuel or a health problem with a passenger, it's hard to judge if it's plain enough, since there is no standard for judgment. What often happens is that aviation personnel who are proficient in English use more general English, often full of colloquialism and superfluous information, or without knowing that they are doing so, or without realizing that their general English could hamper their interlocutor's understanding. The problem for the design of aviation English test is how to define the construct. Clearly, both phraseology and plain English use should be tested to meet the ICAO requirements, but it's hard to know where plain English stops and general English starts, and this poses a problem. Knowing general English does not necessarily mean that one knows how to speak plainly, and using general English in the aviation context is often inappropriate. A test of general English alone is therefore not valid for aviation purposes.
Let's come to your study. I suppose that one of the basic arguments you put forward is that if a test is going to be used to certify someone as proficient in a domain like aviation English, it has to have buy-in of all stakeholders. Now, that includes the test takers, which in this case would be pilots and air traffic controllers. Why do you think this? Why does their view matter on what constitutes proficiency in this context?
One reason why their view matters has to do with the expertise. The Korean pilots and air traffic controllers who are informants in my study are not just test takers, but also experts, in the sense that they probably know more than the average language tester or apply the longest about how communication works in aviation and what makes it effective or ineffective. And the same would apply in other professions like medicine, for example. And that's why it is accepted practice in the field of language for specific purpose to consult a domain expert when constructing or evaluating a language test for a specific professional purpose. In our study, the insights from the aviation experts suggest what matters most for radio telephony communication is, thorough observance of the prescribed convention, professional knowledge, and also strategic skills to deal with aviation personnel with different levels of expertise and English proficiency. Let me just elaborate one of these aspects, the importance of professional knowledge. The Korean aviation specialists view expertise as crucial, and their expertise is built up during the course of their career. Lack of knowledge inevitably leads to inability to communicate enough information, clear information, or the right kind of information. Content knowledge and specific purpose language use cannot really be separated. And the informants in my study were quick to point out that younger pilots, while they tend to have a greater general English proficiency, were often less able to understand an instruction or communicate a problem than those who are more experienced. In this regard, it's an irony that senior members of the aviation industry with expertise and many years of experience were at risk of losing their jobs because they had relatively lower general English proficiency than their younger and relatively inexpert counterparts. This was one of the reasons for the Korean aviation personnel's objection to the ICAO proficiency testing policy. If they had been consulted at the test design stage, and if a more appropriate test of their ability to use language in the professional domain had been developed, there might have been less resistance. So I would say that when we are assessing ability to communicate in a specialized domain like aviation, it's important to consult test takers who are well placed to assist with domain definition. The consequences of not doing so may be serious, both politically, as was the case in Korea, and also in terms of test validity. The test score may not be very meaningful or useful. The question of how the insight from aviation expert can feasibly be incorporated in a language test was not directly addressed in my study. But what the study makes clear is that the traditional task and criteria used on tests of general proficiency cannot capture the key aspects of communication in this professional setting where language use is highly specialized and closely linked to professional knowledge.
In your study, you're focusing on one particular test, the English Proficiency Test for Aviation, which is used to implement ICAO policy in Korea. Can you tell us how you went about investigating stakeholder perceptions of the test and what this told you about the validity of this particular test for its stated purpose?
In the articles you can read in this issue of language testing, we used a questionnaire administered to a large sample of aviation personnel and follow-up interviews to give informants a chance to expand on their questionnaire responses. The topic covered were the Korean aviation personnel's perception of the ICAO policy and its relevance to the requirements of radio telephony communication, their perception of the test administered in Korea, and their views on the important qualities of pilot-controller communication, including their opinions on what differentiates the communicative behavior of native and non-native English-speaking aviation personnel. I coded the responses thematically using a grounded theory approach. I should add that findings reported in this paper are part of a larger PhD study, and in that study, I also used actual recorded discourse samples we got from the air traffic control tower and centers. So these samples were from a non-routine situation in aviation where a problem had arisen. I played this back to focus groups of aviation specialist informants and asked them to say what was good or bad about communication between pilot and air traffic controller and what went wrong in their opinion. Some of the findings of that study are written up in a 2009 paper published in the Australian Review of Applied Linguistics. Triangulation of the three set of findings from the focus group feedback, from the questionnaires, and then the interviews gave me a good sense of what aspect of communication was seen as important for aviation and what the problems were with the current test. especially with regard to the validity of the Korean test or the ICAO's espoused construct of radio telephony communication, most of the questionnaire participants responded negatively, saying the test didn't adequately reflect communicative competence in radio telephony communication.
Okay, so one of the key findings is that the test takers, who are all experienced professionals, don't think that there's a match between the test tasks and the situational and interactional reality of radio telephony. Can you give us one specific example to illustrate this? I mean, give us one particular task on the test and explain why this doesn't really elicit language that can lead to useful domain-specific inferences.
The test, in general, asks people questions which require professional knowledge, but does not require them to communicate in the way they normally communicate in the aviation context. For example, the test takers have to answer questions like, what's the difference between flying a simulator and flying a real airplane? Or what do you usually talk about in the cockpit during long flights? Or respond to a statement like, some experts believe that twin-engine airplanes are safer than four-engine airplanes. Which of the two do you think is safer? So as we can see in the examples that I just gave you, the test takers need to talk about their jobs and about situations which might arise in the professional context rather than perform tasks which simulate the demands of dynamic pilot air traffic controller communication. Also, the tasks, by and large, elicit monologic speech in general English with the minimal opportunities for interaction or co-construction which occurs between the pilot and air traffic controller during takeoffs and landings, for example. So there is a lack of situational and interactional authenticity. That is, the tasks are nothing like the communication task aviation experts perform in their jobs, and the language these tasks elicit is nothing like the actual language used in radio telephony communication.
Well, that's really interesting. It's another good example of the importance for content domain relevance. I think that this is a topic that is going to emerge again and again over the coming years. But let's finish off with one other interesting observation, that Korean airline professionals are highly critical of English L1 speakers who don't comply with the conventions of radio telephony. Why was this, and what relation does it have to the evaluation of the Korean test?
As I mentioned earlier, because of an absence of regulation and conventions for plain English use, its actual use seems to leave much room for subjective interpretation. For native English-speaking aviation personnel, using phraseology and plain English goes against their natural language use, which may be complex and contains lots of redundancy. Maybe that's one of the reasons why most of the discourse-based studies of pilot air traffic controller communication conducted in the U.S. context focused on deviation from phraseology and conventions. Native English speakers often take a long time to get to the point and use a very colloquial language, which not only makes it hard for others to understand, but also wastes precious time. They are not always disciplined, and they are not always aware of how they come across to the listener or sensitive to the listener's needs. Taking one of my discourse examples, when an American pilot makes a divergent request due to lack of fuel, he says, "Roger, sir, due to operational requirements, we are having to divert, and divergent port will be Shanghai. If you could liaise with Shanghai ATC and request a vector for landing in Shanghai, please, Cathay 883. This rather wordy request caused problems of comprehension for the Korean air traffic controller, and this took several turns to resolve. My aviation informants told me that complex wording was unnecessary and would be replaceable with 9 words in standard phraseology. Request divergent to Zulu Sierra Papa Delta Cathay 883. The Korean test is based on general English use and assessed according to the ICAO general proficiency criteria. It would therefore probably reward rather than to penalize this kind of inefficient communication. marks are awarded for fluency, for example, which is something that native speakers often display, but might actually be counterproductive in the aviation context, where precision and conciseness is what matters. So the test seems to be measuring the wrong construct. The ICAO scale and the Korean test, which is based on that scale, implicitly assume a continuum of proficiency from basic to native-like. And this is true of many general proficiency scales. While my informants recognized that some proficiency in English was essential, they were also keen to explain that native speaker proficiency is not the ideal in this context. And this was one of the many reasons behind their objection to the policy and to the Korean English test.
I'm sure that's given our listeners much food for thought. If they haven't already downloaded your paper, I'm sure that they'll want to now. Many thanks for joining us on Language Testing Bites to discuss this hugely important subject.
Thanks for having me today. I really enjoy talking to you.
Thank you for listening to this issue of Language Testing Bites. Language Testing Bites is a production of the journal Language Testing from Sage Publications. You can subscribe to Language Testing Bites through iTunes, or you can download future issues from ltj.sagepub.com or from languagetesting.info. So, until next time, we hope you enjoy the current issue of Language Testing.